Welcome to Tune In 2022. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. This is the reading for Taurus, Taurus Rising, and Taurus Moon. Thank you for joining me. This is a very unusual time in the life of those with any kind of a strong Taurus chart, whether it's rising or moon or sun. And that is due to a few different things, but I think that the most significant of them is that the planet Uranus is making a trek through your sign. It's a 7-year experience. It's about halfway done, and this is happening for the first time in 80 years right now. So it only happens once in a long human lifetime. And it is happening now for the first time in living memory, because the people to whom it may have happened before were very small children way back then. And the reason this is so interesting, and perhaps you have contemplated this, is that Taurus, above all, is a sign that I have found seeks stability. I often joke about Tauruses that all the ones I've ever met still live in the same place they lived on the day that I met them, even if that was 25 years ago. And this really is true. I once made a joke about Taurus not having moved in 37 years, and a friend of mine who is a Taurus wrote back and said, "Well, I just sold my house after 37 years. Uranus doesn't play that way. Uranus is the planet associated with radical, sudden, irrevocable changes. It is the planet of revolution. It is the planet of invention. It has a potentially, let's say, subversive element to it, in that Uranus always plays by its own rules and never plays by anyone else's rules. And that's the main way that people get in trouble when they're under Uranian transits. They just get the idea that, you know, well, the rules don't matter right now. But the rule that this is talking about is the one that says you always have to be the same person. You always have to be the person that people expect you to be, and that your sense of the future is based exclusively on your sense of the past. And this is comforting in some ways, but it's also tiresome in other ways, and it is good to shake things up periodically. It just happens that this shakeup is coming through your life at the same time as a massive shakeup is coming through society. And not enough has been said about the nature of the shakeup of societies and economies, local, state, national, and global throughout the world, as associated with the planet Uranus and Taurus, because Taurus has a lot to do with value systems, the value of commodities, for example. Taurus is all about the things that sustain us. Its symbol is a cow, and that cow is the thing that helps us plow the fields. It creates milk. It makes other cows. And so there's something agrarian and sustaining. You know, Taurus probably represents the time in history of the first domestication of animals and the early days of hunter-gathering and things like that. And, other things. I mean, Taurus represents nice stuff. So it takes some evolution of the human economic condition, you know, to have nice coffee cups or, you know, coin collections or whatever it may be, a piano, whatever it is that floats your boat. And under the influence of Uranus and Taurus, all of this is shaking everywhere, but it's especially shaking inside of you. And I reckon that there's part of you that actually appreciates the dust balls being blown out of the corners and the increased vibration and the pace of change and you're likely to be observing that you have the capacity to move with these changes, partly due to the fact that the astrology that we could say is shaking things up this much. I mean, there's plenty in Capricorn. We're going to get there in a little while, but I'm going to stick to the fixed signs for now. The astrology that is shaking things up in the way that it is so closely personally related to who you are. That's because it's happening in your sun sign or in your first house or close to your moon. And that means that you are likely to be both affected by the movements and changes, but also in one of the best positions to take advantage of them and to really be able to, as Carly Simon said, ride with the tide and go with the flow, and to invent your way out of any situation that you might find yourself in. And that invention is going to be a self-invention. So you are in one of these phases of radical self reinvention and of before and after type of transformations. Those of you who are over the age of about 43 may be able to reconcile the kind of energy of Uranus with the events that happened in your life at approximately age, 42 to 44. That's the Uranian opposition, because Uranus has a 84-year orbit. It gets to the halfway point in about 42 years, and then everything is either disrupted or in some way transformed. And so you're in one of these moments, and this is the primary challenge. Now, you have a lot of other support, and I'm going to get to that, but there's a transit that goes with this one, and it is something of an opposite effect. It is a it is both a stabilizing effect. It represents the presence of opportunities, and it also talks about a kind of change where you get to have a little more control over it. And that is Saturn moving through your 10th house, which is Aquarius. So this, it's the 10th house in all the system, all the house type systems I'm using, whether it's rising sign, using whole sign houses, sun sign, using solar houses, moon sign, using lunar houses, all of which are whole sign. And so in that system, Aquarius is the 10th place away from Taurus. And when we see Saturn in the 10th place, particularly in one of the signs where Saturn excels, then we know that you have opportunity. But the thing is that this opportunity and this aspiration is clashing with Uranus in the first house, because Saturn and Uranus have been through recently a series of three squares, which are just wrapping up as I speak here in late December of 2021. And so when there is a square, it is a process of working one part of the square and then another part of the square. So so you have facets of your psyche described by astrology and facets of your experience. And so Uranus in the first house is restless. It wants to move and shake and change and set itself free from the past and not be so beholden to tradition, even if that means reinventing traditions or, retrieving old traditions. But there's going to be fresh air and fresh energy when Uranus is in the scene. And then this is in this 90-degree pattern, some would say clashing with, or some would say integrating with, Saturn. And what Saturn is calling for is a very practical and traditional approach, low-key and somewhat conservative approach. But nonetheless, Saturn also represents change. There's something funny about Saturn that is not always recognized by astrology, which is the way that it can, in a way similar to Uranus, represent sudden changes and movements. And it usually does that not with quite the aggressive quality of Saturn, of Uranus, which can be like just all of a sudden everything is different one day. But what Saturn wants to do is incrementally clear space for new things to happen. And so right at the end of 2020, there was a conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn right on your the cusp of your 10th place, Aquarius. And that was saying, well, whatever else is going on, you are looking at tremendous opportunities and potentials and possibilities for growth and particularly advancement in your professional life. Of course, this is at a time when everything is being scrambled, when there are major simultaneous attempts to take over the entire world economy going on, most of them coming from the corporate sphere, which now wholly owns the governmental sphere. Everything is corporate now. You could pretty much say that it is a fair statement that there is no such thing as government anymore. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of corporations, a little bit like in Idiocracy, where the Gatorade buys the FDA. Gatorade buys it's worth watching the film Idiocracy, besides how delightful it is and the very friendly acting and the set dressing for the it's documentary quality about the times in which we are living. But the interesting part of this equation is that your ability to shake yourself loose from your past moorings, represented by Uranus and Taurus, is working together with, I think, squares are building blocks, and they are powerful elements that can represent actual achievement. Saturn in the 10th, and following up on the heels of a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in the 10th, is just a blazing opportunity to make successful changes in your life and to redefine your sense of mission and purpose. And you may find that you're defining your sense of mission and purpose in ways that are very closely aligned to what you see society might need. These are not necessarily radical changes. I would say that they, if anything, comport with who you actually are as a person. But even to do this, you've needed the power of Uranus to shake you up and to make big changes happen. Now, this starts in 2018, long before Saturn gets into Aquarius. So your personal level of, reinvention begins in early 2018 when Uranus leaves your 12th house and enters your sign. And so you have had time to, I guess, do what they call in the New Age, quicken your energy. And so this is very much a quickening thing. And the quickening thing can be very radical to you, but it looks to me like you're seeing some very practical, grounded, down-to-earth, and socially acceptable ways to approach your opportunities. And, The nice thing is that while there are shakeups by Uranus, those are likely to feel good, right? It's sometimes like really nice to have a thunderstorm blow through. Sometimes it's fantastic to get fired. Sometimes it is helpful to have some unexpected, seemingly unfortunate thing happen, and then you just run with it. But this does not look entirely unfortunate to me, though what's going on in the larger world is you have opportunities open, and this is going to require that you be, dedicated as much to aspiration as you are to growth and to accountability. That's all Saturn stuff. And while this has been potentially jarring wiggle, and I do, every Taurus I know has had big things happening in their life that have required changing the place they live after many decades, or changing their career after many decades, or relationships changing after many decades. I would suggest that you welcome all these things with open arms and admit that you are one of the survivors. You are one of those people who has, if nothing else, the gift of being able to get by all the time. I don't know very many wealthy Tauruses, but I never know any to have any real problems with their ability to support and sustain themselves, and know that this is your opportunity to move up and into the world in a new way. Now, there are a number of things that are further describing this. However, these are this is the backbone of your astrology right now. Let's add one more thing, and then we will take a section break. Just recently, in the Scorpio, in the autumn of 21, when the sun was in Scorpio, was the first of the eclipses along the Taurus-Scorpio axis. That's you. The eclipses run in pairs. They follow the lunar nodes, and so because the nodes are always opposite one another, and the eclipses come back to any sign pair every 9 years. So the lunar nodes take 18 years to orbit, 9 years to reverse, and now the north node is about to enter your sign, and the south node is about to enter your relationship sign, Scorpio. So eclipses are a special time in life. They're another one of these rapid, radical transition times. And I would say that with Uranus still present in your sign for at least, seems like another 4 years or so, now adding eclipses to that is going to pretty much ensure that you are going to be on the move in terms of not having anything be particularly glued down and settled down like you would seem to prefer your life to be, but you're now moving with this energy now. There's no way that you can't be moving with it, and it's obviously offering you other opportunities for stability rather than only putting out the potential and the prospect for unexpected changes. Saturn in your 10th is something you can really get hold of. But now with the eclipses, you're going to go through a series of before and after moments. And this the way this works is that when you have events that toggle back and forth between your sign and your opposite sign, this is you redefining yourself in the context of your relationships, and it's your relationships being modified based on who you have determined that you are becoming. And so the North Node is in Taurus, the South Node is in Scorpio, and so the direction of travel is generally toward the North Node. The South Node represents a kind of in Western astrology, a kind of untying or loosening up, clearing out, and unraveling. So it has a bit of the nature of Saturn, the South Node, and South Node eclipses, in that it wants to clear space above all else. The challenge, though, is that the South Node from Vedic astrology is a very fiery influence. It is not a calm or, let's say, a... it doesn't get the reputation for being something as stuck as they say in the West. Western astrology could use a big lesson from Eastern astrology, where the nodes pretty much come from, about what this is. So in any event, the changes in your life have to extend into your relationships. You exist in the context of your relationships, and it is vital that you look at the world and see and notice when you're seeing the past, when you're seeing the present, and when you are able to envision the future. With eclipses coming, this is not a time to cling to anything or anyone, and this too is challenging for Taurus. Taurus, again, tends to prefer stable long-term situations, and there are many people who will do anything to have that be that way, but the eclipses are like going through a series of Like pressurized chambers, you might think of it that way. The whole 18-month cycle of the eclipses moving through any sign pair is like going through a series of air pressure locks to raise or lower the pressure. I think that they basically release pressure. And another way to look at them is like canal locks, you know, like a how do barges go over hills in a canal? Well, they use locks. They float the boat, and then they fill the chamber up, and then the boat is sailing along on higher ground because boats can't sail uphill, nor can water flow uphill. So if you want a boat to go uphill, you need a lock. Well, that's what this is like. So you're going to go through a series of these over 18 months. And the first one happened in Taurus a few weeks ago. So that was when the sun was in Scorpio, about maybe five weeks ago. That would be somewhere around the last week of November, maybe November 18th or something. There was the first eclipse in Taurus. So you're getting, you're getting the vibe here. And what eclipses allow you to do is to make your changes incrementally. Uranus tends to want a clash, bang, smash up, do it, let's reinvent everything, throw it out, reinvent the wheel, whatever it may be. Eclipses have some of that, but not quite that. They mostly are, if you especially view the entire 18-month stage, which will take us into the middle of 2023, where we've got a lot of stuff to talk about in 2023, let yourself go through this series of changes and plan for it. Keep your relationships loose rather than attempting to hold people down. Be mindful when people are attempting to hold you down, and don't confuse that with commitment. It may be something entirely different. And, overall, this is a time when you have to be courageous and you have to think on your feet. That's both eclipses and Uranus, and just be willing to, in a sense, be led by your opportunities and by your circumstances. Okay, so this mostly covers houses 1, 10, and 7. One last thing I will add is the double nature of, there's a few ways the astrology is saying this, but there's a lot in your chart, in fact, far more than two elements that are calling you into group environments rather than one-on-one environments. Now, all relationships are ultimately dyadic. All relationships are, I think, ultimately between two main elements. But there is such a thing as a group. And one of the ways I see the group being activated is considerable activity going on in Pisces, your 11th place. That's Jupiter is about to enter Pisces, or already has by the time you're listening. Neptune has been there for a while. Jupiter is going to put a kind of a lens in front of Neptune and allow you to see all that you've been missing. But this is in a very public part of your chart where you're called upon to take care of people and to take care of the world, and where you are also inclined to seek your professional income. So Jupiter entering this is, I think, going to be a welcome relief from having Neptune there without Jupiter. The thing to be careful of here is that when you get into any group situation, no matter how nice the group may be or how well-intentioned it may be, you are likely to be aware of a dark element that is present in society. And so without being suspicious of everyone, it's just important that you keep an eye on people's intentions, that you study what is motivating them in any group environment. This is less about one-on-one situations, but it can be applied. You want to be a master of the motives and the intentions of other people, and also note that there is a process of consequences. This is Westerners think we live in a world free of karma because we don't really ever see the results of negative actions manifesting as negative consequences for those who take negative actions. It just seems we're in this time period where crime pays. But you are on notice that there are going to be manifestations of the results of group action, and this is why you need to have your group, let's say your group antennas on, and to be the person paying attention in the room in any semi-public situation. Another way this manifests is Saturn in Aquarius. So this is saying that first of all, your group leadership skills are innate in you, and Saturn, that's thanks to having Aquarius on the 10th in a very exalted position in your chart. And then Saturn passing through Aquarius in the 10th is focusing your necessity to take leadership in group environments. Now, Saturn can also represent fear. You may be nervous or apprehensive about this, but I suggest that you set that aside and find out how well you can do this when you take an authoritative but low-key approach. You want to emphasize Saturn rather than Uranus. And Saturn in Aquarius is kind of like the executive vice president who can get everything done and leave the president free to do their job. Finally, another group indicator, that is the hypothetical planet or trans-Neptunian point called Apollon on your seventh house cusp in Scorpio. So this is a third, very handy thing saying that you are a gathering point for not only groups, but a gathering point for commerce and trade. Apollon represents, in a sense, it represents all good things that come from human society and the advances in human society, and that includes commerce. It includes science. So it is like this. And by science, I mean the advances, using the advances of technology to the benefit of the human race, not as a weapon against the human race. In any event, you are a kind of a meeting point. And so as I'm suggesting only for a couple of the signs, yours is certainly one, that your life, your home, your place need or would be well served to be a kind of a community salon. And that does not mean there have to be a lot of people. There can be a weekly dinner with three or four people showing up. And the beauty of these, covering one more element in the fixed signs, is that within your home, it is possible for all people to be equal. You have Leo on the fourth house cusp, in the fourth place, let's say, better said. And what Leo wants to do is hold the world together. That's because the sun is at the center of the solar system, and Leo is ruled by the sun. And so it is in the nature of Leo to hold things together when Leo's working well, and this shows up as your home. So you are a center point in your home whose role is to shine the light and warmth and provide energy and hold things together. And the equality of this is indicated by the planet Varuna. So we get a set of house rules when we talk about Varuna in the fourth house. And the house rules are: everyone must be good for their commitments. We treat each other like equals. We remember that we're in my house, meaning your house. And then Leo, well, I think that Leo, when you really look at it experientially, is much more about a service orientation than it is given credit for. But I think above all else, Varuna is about the honoring of contracts and agreements. There's a number of different gods and goddesses throughout history that have that, but Varuna is the one that's accessible to us right now, and it's in your home. And this just says something that's quite elegant and I think beautiful, which is that in your home, everyone honors their contracts. And people who don't honor their contracts don't belong in your home. And that means you honor all your commitments and all of your contracts, but it also means that everyone is held to one standard. Okay, so that is most of what's happening on the fixed cross right now. We touched a little bit on the 11th house. I'll have more to say about that. And then when we come back from a little break, featuring, oh, this is the sound of Jupiter. Actually, not Vision Quest, but rather a kind of a radio recording of the sound of the planet Jupiter, which is becoming one of the signature sounds of TuneIn. Let's give that a listen. As a scholar of the solar houses, I'm always curious what it is about the solar chart that says what it really is to be identified with one of the signs. So the whole theory of the solar house is that all 12 signs affect every sign. We count your sign as the first. The other 11 signs are going to fall out around the wheel, and the whole wheel counts since we are whole people, and that where the signs fall against the houses describes the theme of that part of our lives. And so one of the things I think that most succinctly describes Taurus is the presence of Capricorn on the ninth house. It's your fellow earth sign. It is the sign of the very old earth. It's Capricorn, though it's the last of the earth signs, I think, is the sign of the wild earth and mountains and, you know, events surrounding mountains and places like where mountains meet oceans. And also, it's the sign of old institutions. It's the sign of things that tend to be stalwart entities, very old brands, as well as what used to be the most dependable institutions in society, family, the structure of family, and all of that stuff. And having Capricorn on the ninth house brings a religious flavor into the Capricorn experience, or brings Capricorn into the religious experience of the ninth house. And so the Capricorn has kind of an orthodox feeling because it tends to be heavily invested in the past. Now, Taurus also is heavily invested in the past, but archetypally not quite the same way as Capricorn. But you still have Capricorn on a very important house, which is the house that deals with your, essentially, your cosmology. That's the ninth house, is your entire conceptual framework of a reality that exceeds you. So the third house is your personal beliefs and how, you know, the way you speak and the way you write and where you live and who's in your village and how you conduct minor business right around. But the ninth house is where you meet the great big world. And you meeting the great big world can have, like, the feeling I once had at on the campus of Columbia University approaching the library, and it looked like I was walking towards something, which it kind of is, like twice the size of the Parthenon, but open for business. That sensation of an institution that will last forever. And you have this Capricorn quality on the house associated with your cosmology and your religious beliefs. Now, this is to suggest that there's a kind of, let's say, a very strong potential for piety with Taurus, right? That's that, you know, that's part of the, you know, never wear white pants after Labor Day, but there is also a reverence and respect for the way that things were done in the past. Now, the problem here is when you combine Capricorn and the religious tendencies of the ninth house, it's easy to go into a kind of a purist, orthodox concept, and then have some potentially mistaken concept that is going to be helpful if only you were, you know, pure enough, only if you were essentially able to conform so perfectly that, you know, God would, you know, bless you. So it's kind of Calvinist. However, the saving grace of all that has been that Pluto has been coming through town. And Pluto's been coming through town for a while. This starts in 2008 in a different universe. This starts under the Bush-Cheney administration, the last year of the Bush-Cheney administration. Does anyone remember back that far? This was the subprime mortgage crisis, which became the Great Recession. It was the Obama versus McCain. It was the everyone suspending their campaign and rushing back to Washington to attend to the important business of the economic meltdown. Well, the second Pluto got into Capricorn, there was this massive economic meltdown. Now, I don't know if somebody had an astrologer who said, yeah, if you're going to just pull the plug on things, wait till Pluto's in Capricorn. But it happened. And for you, this has represented a similar dismantling, but of the part of your mind that is so so aligned with this kind of orthodoxy and propriety and piety that you could be trapped in it. But suddenly you've got Pluto, which is bringing some, let's just say it's putting the ghost back in the machine. It's bringing some soul into this. But one of the ways it's bringing soul back into it is by dismantling, let's forget about the bigger world, your personal world, the ninth in your personal world. Pluto has been dismantling your belief structures for years. And part of the destruction of your, or dismantling of your belief structures, is something about your concept of family is also being dismantled, but Pluto also has a renewing quality to it. Now, this is to say that, borrowing a line from Jung, who said something like, religion is the substitute for religious experience. Well, with Pluto going through your ninth, you're not going to be so interested in religion. You're going to be interested in religious experience. You want to go to the place. You want to feel the thing. You want to feel the voice of God coming through your mind. You want to feel the power and presence of your soul. Right, this is not just about something in a stodgy book or going to some old guy who's never had sex for advice about anything. So, this has been a long trip. We're now entering year 14 of this. Right, 2022 is year 14. This is not over yet. So it's going to be one more full year. Then Pluto starts to enter Aquarius. Finish up the section with that. Now, one of the things that is happening now is that as I record here on the 21st, Venus is stationed retrograde as of the 19th. And so Venus is stationed retrograde in Capricorn. Venus is an important planet because it's the ruling planet of Taurus. So Venus is a kind of a significator for you in your chart, wherever Venus happens to be. So there's a number of ways to read significators. As we all know, reading tarot cards, you might, as the reader or the querent, might come up as any one of a number of different cards. And in astrology, one of your significators is the first house and what's there. But then another significator is the ruler of the first house and what it's doing. And right now, what Venus is doing is making a triple conjunction to Pluto. So Pluto, ultra slow mover. It's been in this particular sign and house in your chart now approaching the 14th year. Venus has never quite done this, which is to make a very tight triple conjunction to Pluto, and particularly right at the end of Pluto's time going through Capricorn. So what this is saying is, essentially, the simplest read I can give you on this is that you're catching up with yourself. That now you've been through this long process of your beliefs being changed and your concepts of purity and orthodoxy being replaced by something a lot more, let's say, perhaps Bacchanalian. There's a Bacchanalian quality to Pluto. One thing I love about Jeffrey Tarnas's interpretation, Richard Tarnas's, confusing my Pluto people, Rick Tarnas's interpretation of Pluto is that he says, well, it could look like Mick Jagger, right? It's got a Dionysian quality to it. Ah, well, so this is one of the things that is potentially replaced. Your piety and your orthodoxy, I trust this has given you permission to have a lot more fun than you have potentially had in the past, and to express your physicality in a certain way. But Pluto is bringing actual soul to where there really were kind of let's say vacant corridors of power and stuffy books about how you're supposed to live and what you're supposed to do and how many Hail Marys and Our Fathers you're supposed to say if you eat a hamburger on Friday. Now Venus it made a conjunction to Pluto, I believe, on the 11th. Let's see, December 10th, 21st. Sunday was the 11th. So Pluto made a conjunction. Venus made a direct motion conjunction to Pluto on the 11th of December. It's going to make a retrograde conjunction to Pluto on Christmas. So what Pluto does is it transforms and regenerates everything that it touches. And it's also possible to say, well, it kills something. But when we're talking about astrology and talking about spiritual matters, it is a transformational event, and so this is talking about, it is describing going deep into yourself and letting go and being able to change, letting yourself be transformed. Now, normally Pluto Venus events go by in one day, but now we've got one that's taking it's much of December, January, February, and a little part of March. Now we've got a long process of Pluto and Venus doing this dance, going deeper, deeper, deeper in. And it's kind of like the journey of Persephone into the underworld. So the way that I look at this is, again, you catching up with all the growth that you have done over the past 12 to 14 years associated with being able to let go of the previous orthodox rules that essentially had you trapped in the past and trapped in someone who you were not. And to find who you are, to find yourself and to celebrate who you are and expand who you are. So there's something very tantric about this, because we're talking about a fusion of essentially religion, the demolishing of tradition, the bringing the soulful quality into the whole equation, and then the passion aspect of when Venus and Dionysus meet. And Venus is a very sexual planet. There can be no denying this. And the combination of Venus and Pluto is essentially a reminder to trust that your lust and passion and drive and your quest for profound understanding of who you are is a spiritual matter, and it cannot be left out and still be a spiritual matter. couple of other brilliant things going on in this house. Long-term things. So this is a very active house for you in this lifetime, and particularly in this approximately half of your lifetime. And really, the events in Capricorn go way back to the 1990s when this all began with Neptune and Uranus going through Capricorn. But here's one last brilliant thing I'll leave you with for now. And it's on the theme of direct contact rather than going through some kind of authority, right? The nature of, some would say that the nature of spirituality versus I hate that word, but the nature of spirituality versus religion is that what it means to be spiritual is a more direct sense of contact. This is a heck of a lot more than spiritual because it's so physical, involving Capricorn and Venus. However, on the lines of the direct contact, rather than reading it in a book, there are three relatively new influences, slow moving, more or less from the standpoint of a planetary transit, perpetual 20-year transits coming through Capricorn, fairly recent. And they are points called Ixion. That's a trans-Neptunian. Ixion, I believe, is a Plutino in the orbit of Pluto. Then there's Pholus, the second centaur, and there's Quasar. So let's talk about Pholus and Quasar. These things are giving you direct access to the wisdom of your ancestors. And so it would make sense in a way to commence a little religion of ancestor worship. Now, ancestor worship, I mean, what are we talking about here? I don't know, just funny visions come to mind, but really getting to know your predecessors and making contact with their spirits. And there's two models of this. One is going back to your great-grandparents. When we talk about, that's Pholus, when we talk about going back to your great-grandparents, there's really two things that come to mind immediately, and one of which is get a hold of the living people who knew all those people who can take you back to your great-grandparents' generation. So that's kind of the destination of Pholus is the great-grandparents' generation. The second thing with Pholus is to understand the influence of addiction, and in particular, alcohol, as it has influenced your family line. Now, you may not know everything there is to know about this. You may know quite a bit about what there is to know about this. You probably know something about yourself in regards to this. But there's something about Pholus that that kind of delivers things down the generational lines where there is the distortion of alcohol. The distortion of alcohol is often about such things as the emotional unavailability, excuse making, the doing things you absolutely might not do were that not there, then regretting those things. That's a problem with alcohol, and any general sense of either things going out of control or the fear of things going out of control, and to understand how this has influenced you going back to your immediate family, the ones where you're likely to know their names. Where you can ask someone their names. You can probably name half of your great-grandparents. I don't know. I haven't done this exercise. I always want to do it when Pholus is in the scene. There's wisdom coming from here. Quasar goes all the way back to the Aborigines and where they came from. So this is far back, further than four generations. It is much further back. Quasar takes us into creation mythology, and so one of the things to bring into your, you might say, your new spirituality is your own original concept of your creation myth and your family's creation myth and your. The creation myth you were given as a kid. Most of us were fed this Adam and Eve story because we're in a Judeo-Christian society. But what's your real creation story? Where do you really think you and everyone came from? And one thing I can tell you is that if you can orient on this, you will find guidance. It seems abstract. Oh my God, what do I do? What do I do in this career situation? What do I do in this relationship? But if meanwhile you're you have like a notebook of teachings of the ancestors that you write down what you learn, you keep their pictures around, you experiment in various ancestry type databases, you're going to make connections and learn things about yourself that will give you the kind of stabilizing, grounding experience that you really do love. You are a Taurus. You like to be grounded in the planet, and one of the ways to ground in the planet is to understand not only your origins, but the origins of your beliefs, even as you and your relationship to your beliefs are in this in this actual present experience of radical transformation. All right, let's take a little bit of a breather, and I have one more thought here, and then we will keep going. With all this talk about spiritual issues, we might bring up the matter of temptation. Temptation for you is what most people think of as temptation is for you liberation and celebration. So when I say temptation, the devil does not manifest in the form of your sexuality. That's the goddess manifesting. When you have my permission to use your innate attractiveness to have all the fun that you want. Speaking as one who is a great fan of all critters and things, Taurus. When I say temptation, what I mean is the devil luring us into a technocratic society. And when I say the devil luring us into a technocratic society, what I really mean is the devil inviting us into hell. Why is this important for you? Well, you have 10th in Aquarius. This is an important indicator of the state of technology in society. The 10th is a house that's about your accountability, your achievements, your responsibilities, and your leadership style. And this indicates that you have, for as individual of a person as you are, that you have a probe, a natural probe into the group mind. And the Taurians I know are probably all the most reluctant users of technology. One person I know had their electric piano is from like 1980. it probably still takes half an hour to boot up. Another Taurus, I'm talking about radios. Radios. Whoever talks about radios, and I don't mean Sirius XM. So Taurus is not the sign that tends to have a love affair with technology. It tends to use technology like you might use a knife only when you need to cut something, right? You're not going to walk around flashing a knife and staring at your knife collection all day long, which is the way that most people use technology. They're brandishing it everywhere they go. Not so for Taurus. This is a good thing. Now, why is this important? Really, really meaningful. Well, Pluto is coming to Aquarius. Pluto coming to Aquarius is, as far as I can tell, and I'm speaking as a longtime observer of humanity, a student of technology from the McLuhan family, which is a real devotion for us, and observing the way things have been going, we are being dragged into a transhuman world, a world where people are going to voluntarily merge themselves with IT technology. It is happening now as we speak. The chip implants are coming out. The graphene is in the injections. It can be written on by the 5G signals, and humans are being lured into merging with technology, but they're not being told what's going on. No manufacturer is talking about what the fucking graphene is for. No manufacturer is saying the graphene is compatible with this 5G system that everyone's cheering so you can have faster uploads on your phone. Really? We need that? This is an invitation to hell. You are a leader, and you are very likely to have a balanced concept of what should happen. And Pluto is coming to your 10th house. And so you are going to be increasingly in a position of leadership and even potentially the wielding of power on this issue. It to me says you will have many opportunities to make choices that affect other people. That's the nature of the 10th house. And Pluto is going to make approximately a little more than 20-year journey across Aquarius. So when we were all younger, Pluto would blow through a sign in 12 years. Now it's slowing way down to, because Pluto's far from the sun. And so we're going to have 20 years of Pluto in Aquarius. And even though Pluto hasn't gotten there yet, we are seeing the warning signs. And I am understating my case because this is an astrology reading. However, this is a central spiritual issue of our times. Is it appropriate to turn people into artificial intelligence devices? So you may think, how is this possible now? I like to plant things in my vegetable garden. You know, you probably do like to dig in the dirt and, you know, play your handmade drum. However, I assure you that as time goes on, you're going to be increasingly involved in making leadership level decisions around this issue. So please pay attention and see the warning signs. Now, there's one thing, and see the warning signs, and then also see the opportunities that you have to guide yourself, people around you, and the people who are subject to your power in a direction that is as natural as you like your life and the world to be. Now, there's one more point that I didn't bring. I mentioned it in terms of the ninth house, but it may be the single most significant long-term placement in your ninth house, and there are several, and this is Ixion. So Ixion is the question of whether or not there are morals. So Ixion addresses the question of amorality, not whether something is inherently right or wrong, but the question is there any standard at all by which we judge right from wrong? and you need this, and you're good at this. You have a sense of what is right and wrong. The problem with the times we're living in is that they are extremely conformist times where you may think you've thought something through, you may think something is common sense, you may think you need to do something because somehow it makes your life convenient or grants you privileges, but that's not a real evaluation. That is, any evaluation that is based on convenience or conformity is, by definition, not an actual ethical evaluation of the situation. It is just simply not. And you need a real ethical evaluation of the situation. And my clue is, if this is an easy conversation to have with yourself, then you're not doing it. If it is a difficult conversation, difficult in that you are troubled by potential outcomes, or difficult because you have to do a lot of weighing and balancing, well, now you know if that internal wrestling match of right and wrong is happening, that you're probably in a state of mind where you are making actual ethical evaluations of things. As Pluto, skipping back to Pluto now, so that's Ixion, right? And we'll come back to Pluto in 30 seconds. It's important to know when people have completely scrapped the entire concept of ethics and morals. It is also very frightening when these people have nothing but power and resources, and then you discover they have absolutely no ethics and morals. You do tend to have ethics and morals. Therefore, you would tend to project at least the having of ethics and morals onto other people. But that's a mistake that you can't make right now. I would strongly suggest that you have everything include a kind of an ethical evaluation ongoing. Because the difference between right and wrong today, right now, has never been more important. Now, Pluto getting into Aquarius is going to focus attention on you. Now, this does not happen until March of 2023. So all of 2022 and then the first couple of months of 2023, Pluto will remain in Capricorn. When Pluto moves into Aquarius, that's right around the time Saturn moves into Pisces, Pluto moves into Aquarius, and that's going to basically become a permanent feature in your 10th house. The other temptation, the other invitation to hell of Pluto in Aquarius in the 10th is being enamored of power, and in particular, the power that is granted to you by technocracy. And you will have opportunities to sell out. Okay, so the option to this is to use all you have learned from Pluto in the 9th house, all of this very hard-won knowledge and wisdom and experience, continuing to make no assumptions. It is crucial that you be unassuming in all things, and that everything be evaluated, and that you take nothing at face value. All of this work through the 9th house is about dismantling all that face value shit. The appearances, the facades, the things that are said to be right that are never questioned, the things that are said to be wrong that are never questioned. All of this must be, well, you have learned to evaluate, and you're going through kind of one last trip through the ringer with these series of Venus retrogrades where you really are having to catch up and where you may acknowledge that you've made certain mistakes and can correct them. Correct them by making adaptations to your character. You actually can make decisions and about your character. And under the influence of Venus, Pluto, 9th, you've got the chance to do this. You've got the chance to put a lot of bad decisions and bad evaluations of yourself behind you. Before we move on from 9th, 10th, there's one last thing about to happen in the 9th with Pluto involved. And I thought this was very curious when I discovered it, because I was looking at the series of three conjunctions of your ruling planet, Venus, to Pluto. And it turns out that, you know, there was one conjunction on the 11th of December, another conjunction on the 25th of December. You may be able to note those dates. And then when Venus stations direct and goes all the way back across most of the degrees where it was retrograde and makes a third conjunction to Pluto, it's also in a conjunction to Mars. There is no escaping the sexual nature of this. The gender polarity discussion, the which facet of self do I express? What is the visceral, physical, emotional nature of my sexual orientation? Not what I might proclaim, what t-shirt or button I might wear, not what I might put on my Facebook thing or whatever, but rather your actual emotional, biological, soul-oriented quality of who you are as a man, as a woman, as what and whatever combination of those things that you might be. Now, the late ninth house has a very important quality to it that is only taught that I know of by one astrologer, and then I picked up on this, and I have found it to be true many times. What's going on late in the ninth represents the unconscious baggage of mother. And so one of the things I would propose that this Venus series of conjunctions to Pluto, ending with a Venus-Mars conjunction to Pluto in your late ninth house, is burning off a lot of sexual karma of your mother. And by sexual karma, I mean her fears, her secrets, her religious hang-ups, how she felt about conceiving you, how she felt about having sex with your father, how she felt about sex generally, what she imprinted you with your sexuality, what happened as a result of the religious implications of what she did. Did she bring you to church? Did she not bring you to church? What did she say? Did the priest mess with you? Whatever the case may be, you want to really do the a thorough analysis and dissection of your mother's sexual hang-ups, and then don't stop there. What were her religious hang-ups? They're often exactly the same thing. So you have a rare opportunity to resolve a heck of a lot of karma and in one short time, and to set yourself free, and then also to do something that I think is impressive in any lifetime, which is to complete a true inner marriage of your male and female qualities, such that your whether you're a man or a woman, the your need to be completed by a man or a woman is something that you have within yourself, that you have had a kind of a the alchemical marriage of the inner man and the inner woman, such that you proceed as a spiritually and sexually complete entity, then able to engage in relationships that are whole, because you come into the relationship whole. So this is vitally, vitally important. And I would count this as a profound factor of self-actualization. And let's end on that, because I haven't talked about what I consider to be one of the most crucial and informative signs to read when reading Taurus, which is to read Aries. So I'll give the very short version of this. If you've heard a number of my Taurus readings, particularly in the Chiron era the past 4 years, you've heard me say a version of this. But what I would say here is that where we have Aries in our chart is where we seek to find ourselves. You have Aries in the 12th house. So the 12th house is a side dimension, or it is like a hidden room in the psyche. It can also represent the trance that we walk around in all day when we're going through life in a kind of way that's halfway between automatic and halfway between living a dream, but we don't realize it's a dream, and so we're in this. But I think more of the 12th, it's easier to understand in terms of a blind spot. And what's going on in Taurus, in Aries now, is that blind spot is having light shined in it. And so with Chiron in particular making its way through Aries, you have a deep probe into your inner psyche, which is fueling, driving, focusing, funding, inspiring, and facilitating your self-actualization on a profound level. This is about finding yourself. You think, I don't need to find myself. I'm sitting right here in my living room. Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the sense of waking up to who you actually are. And so we are about to experience in early 22 Venus, Mars, Pluto, right in your ninth. That is a inner fusion, inner completion, inner awakening. And that is coupled with Chiron moving through your 12th house, which is allowing you access to an inner reality where you have this tropism to become and at last emerge as who you are. And since Chiron doesn't come to town more than every 50 years, the last time this happened was in the early 1970s. We were all a heck of a lot younger, or we were germ cells waiting to be turned into a zygote. So either this happened a very long time ago, or it has never happened before, and it is happening now. And in many ways, it is the thing behind the scenes that you could imagine is driving everything, which is this hunger, this quest, this urgent need, this thirst for who you are, for your humanity, for your ability to confidently stand in the in your true and full presence. The thing about Chiron and the thing about the 12th is it can always have you chasing that thing and thinking like you're never finding it, but actually you are doing so. And so I would propose not being off-put by any sensation that I'm not really succeeding. I was once playing a live concert, and I had two very experienced musicians on the stage with me, and I was the one guitarist. And the entire time they were playing, I was trying to catch the beat. I was trying to find out, where's the one? Where does the musical phrase actually begin? I could never find it. I felt like I was lagging behind and like kind of in drowning in the music and left in the dust. But I was, the entire time we were playing, which is like about 40 minutes, completely improvised, I was like, where's the one? Where's the one? This is, I, well, when I went back and listened to it, it didn't sound like that at all. It sounded like I was right in the pocket with the music. Quite a great experience. The first time an audience ever applauded. So that's my play. Like, it's happened once. So for you, this find the beat, find the one. Well, keep with that. Stick with that. Keep saying, well, who am I? This is really the question. Who am I, and were I this person I imagine I am? Ah, what would I do? So it's not an abstraction. It's a question of beingness, sensation of who one is, what one aspires to be, the quest, the thirst, the drive, the attempt to listen to the music and find the beat. But then it's a question of, what do you do? What do you play? How do you express yourself while you're doing that? And one thing that's going to happen is if the 12th is working right, you are going to want to expose to the light and to reveal to other people all that you keep the deepest inside. The me no one knows. The secretest part of you is concealed in the 12th. I often say jokingly that the 8th is the house of secrets, the ones you tell one other person. The 12th is the house of secrets that you keep from yourself. But once you start to reveal the secrets of the 12th to yourself it becomes a very natural process to want to reveal them to other people. And so these secrets of the 12th, this deep, ancestral, ancient process of your karma being worked out, and this deeply concealed sense of self, right? Aries in the 12th, right? It's it is now wanting to express itself to a percolate up several levels to come out of the 12th, and the next place it's going to go is the 9th. It's going to shape your soul. It's going to shape your physical experience of who you are. It's going to shape your ethics, shape your decisions, shape your necessities, your sense of what is right and wrong. And then Venus and Mars are going to proceed through the zodiac where you share and express and demonstrate what you have discovered. So self-actualization is pointless unless there's a demonstration, an expression, a sense of becoming that is made real by choice, by action, by sharing, by allowing others to know who you are discovering yourself to be. This is a whole new take on your relationships, because often it's quite the opposite. It's who you, allowing people to know who you were, and now you're doing something, or you're being invited to do something much more vulnerable, which is to allow people to know who you are becoming on the most intimate inner level, with no control over the process. All right, on that note, I leave you for now. Thank you for your time and your trust. And perhaps I'll see you over at one of the other signs. Thank you, Taurus. Lots of love. And bye for now.